The Jewish Game of Conquest, Part 7. 7. Okay. Today we're going to be discussing the city of Bethlehem. If you look in your map over here, so here, come get a map.
Why is this such a holy city?
Well, so we're going to talk about it. Oh, there you go, sir.
How many copies did you make?
So the city of Beis Lechem is a little bit south of Yerushalayim, as you see on the map over there. It's a little bit south of Yerushalayim.
Why do Christians think it's the holiest city?
We will talk about that, hopefully, towards the end of the lesson. The word Beis Lechem literally means the house of bread. Base means house of, lechem means bread. In Arabic, lechem means meat. So in Arabic, the name Beis Lechem means the house of meat. And archaeologists want to say that Beis Lechem was actually named after a Babylonian god named Lachmu. So that's what they claim that the name Beis Lechem is. And it could be it's true, because the fact of the matter is that there's the Amarna letters, which were found in Jordan, I believe. No, in Egypt, which is a very important archaeological finding, which has all kinds of letters from the ancient kings that lived even before the time of Avraham Avinu. And amongst these letters, they found references to the city Beis Lechem. So it's something that, you know, predates the Jewish people.
What did they call it back then? It was still called Beis Lechem.
The name was Beis Lechem.
All the time?
Yeah. The name always, as Wikipedia says, the name always stayed the same, but it could be that the meaning of the name had different meanings depending on who was, like, sort of occupying the city at that time. So, like, in Hebrew, it means the house of bread. In Arabic, it means the house of meat. And apparently, there's a Babylonian god named Lachmu. I want to say that Beis Lechem means, like, the house of this god Lachmu. I don't know.
Just pronounce it differently.
Yeah, basically, something like that. Now, an alternate name for the city of Beis Lechem is Ephrat, or Ephrata.
Oh, the place Ephrat, the Beis Lechem?
So Ephrat, or Ephras, or Ephrata, or is another name for the city of Beis Lechem. It could be that Ephrata doesn't actually mean the name of, is not an actual name, but actually just means to Ephrat. Because there's a grammatical rule in Biblical Hebrew that when you add a hey at the end of a name of a place, it's the same thing as adding a lamed to the beginning of it. So, like, if you say le Mitzrayim, it means to Mitzrayim. And if you say Mitzrayim ma, you add a hey to the word Mitzrayim, it means to Mitzrayim as well. So Ephrata doesn't necessarily mean, it's not necessarily a name, it could mean to Ephrat.
What does that spell? Le Mitzrayim.
It doesn't say that, it never says that.
What does it say?
It doesn't say that. Now, a person, there's also, what's it called? It's called a gentilic, a person who's from that city, or a toponym. So a person who's from the city of Ephrat is described as an Ephrati, an Ephraite, something like that, which is also a term that's used to describe people from the tribe of Ephraim, Ephrati. So whenever you see the term Ephrati in Tanakh, in the Bible, so you have to know if it means a person from the city of Ephrat, or it's referring to a person from the tribe of Ephraim. The word Ephrat, according to rabbinic literature, is a reference to the word pru, which means to make fruitful. So Ephrat means someone who can be fruitful and have children and grow a population. There, just one more point before we get to, like, different places and different stories where the name Ephrat comes up. But there's a place called Beis Lechem in the book of Joshua, in Joshua 19:15, and over there there's a city Beis Lechem that's in the tribal territory of Zvulun. And the tribal territory of Zvulun is up north. So this Beis Lechem that we're talking about in general is the Beis Lechem in the tribal territory of Yehuda. As we said, it's a little bit south of Yerushalayim. But there's another city with the same name that's, like, all the way up north in the tribal territory of Zvulun. Okay, those are just some quick facts about the city of Beis Lechem. The first place where the city of Beis Lechem is mentioned is in next week's parsha, actually, in Parshas Vayishlach, when Yaakov Avinu is on his way back to Hebron. So we spoke about yesterday and 2 days ago, Yesterday, 2 days ago, we spoke about that he went to Shechem. And 2 days ago, we spoke about after he left Shechem, he went to Beis El. And today, we're going to mention that between being in Beis El and actually getting back to Hebron, where his father Yitzchak was living, he actually had a somewhat bittersweet experience. They were on the journey to, this is in Genesis 35. They were on the journey, and they were journeying from Beis El, and they got to this place called Ephrat, which we said is synonymous with Beis Lechem. And Yaakov Avinu's wife, Rachel, went into labor. She was pregnant, and now she's giving birth, and she went into labor, and she had difficulty with the childbirth. And she gave, and the midwife said to her, "Don't worry, you're going to have a son." And this is Rachel's second son, which is sort of in a contrast to Leah's six sons. So this is Rachel's second son. So it's sort of like it's a big happy occasion, a big simcha over there. And so Rachel's, "Oh, I'm going to have a son." And then as she was dying, so she was having a lot of pain in her labor, and she was very, it wasn't going so well, and she ended up dying as she was giving birth to her son. And she, before she died, she called him Ben Oni, the son of my affliction. And then his father, the kid's father, Yaakov, called the kid Binyamin. Instead of Ben Oni, he called him Binyamin, which means the son of the right. Right? So that's the story of Rachel giving birth. And what happened was that she died over there in this place called Ephrat, or Beis Lechem, and she was buried there on this site of Beis Lechem / Ephrat, and Yaakov buried her there, and that's where Rachel is buried to this very day.
The father could change the name.
What? Yeah, the father changed the name. It's an interesting point. Why is Binyamin called Binyamin, the son of the right, Binyamin? Right, what's right as opposed to the left? That was not a political statement. Right? Why is he called the son of the right? So the way we understand it is
that's
like this.
Word,
no? It's liberal. So you've been listening to too much Ben Shapiro, right? So
exactly.
So the way I understand it is like this: the default position of a man, like when Adam was first created, he was created facing eastwards, because we understand that the Shekhinah, the holy presence of Hashem, is in the east, and so facing eastwards, so you have north, which is to your left, and you have south, which is to your right. Now all of Yaakov Avinu had 12 sons. 11 out of 12 sons were born in Haran, which is to the north. So they're on the left. And Binyamin was born in Eretz Yisrael, which is to the south. So that's to the right. So that's why he was called Binyamin. He's the son of the right, because he was born in the right side. He was born on the right side. He was born south of where all his brothers were born. So that's why he's called Binyamin.
Where's Haran?
Because he was born in Eretz Yisrael. Where is Haran? It's in northern Mesopotamia. It's off of the Tigris. I don't have a map of Mesopotamia. I only have a map of the Holy Land over here. But
it would be higher, it would be above all this.
This is just an interesting geographical tidbit that a friend of mine once pointed out. I don't have a world map over here, but if you imagine a map of the world, and you think of what's called the Gulf of Aden, is a body of water that's in between the Arabian Peninsula and the Horn of Africa. Yeah. So imagine if you're going up the Gulf of Aden, you're going northwards up the Gulf of Aden. So on your right side is the country of Yemen, and on your left side is the country of Somalia. Which is very interesting, because in Hebrew, the word for right is Yemin, and the word for left is small. So Yemen and Somalia is like right and left. It's just it's a very interesting phenomenon.
In which language?
And what's the middle?
That's the name of the country.
No, which language?
Yemen and Somalia. In Hebrew, Yemen means right and small means left.
That's crazy.
And where do you have to be for that to work out geographically?
It's called the Gulf of Aden.
No, if you're going to
This body of water in between the northeastern horn of Africa and the southern tip of the Arabian
northwest.
Peninsula.
Because Morocco is northeast. It's northwest.
No, northeast. No. No, Morocco's northwest, my friend.
No, Morocco's northwest?
Yes, Morocco's northwest. So that's the story of Rachel's death and her burial in the city of Beis Lachem, and it's a famous.
I know it.
It's a famous site that people go to cave of Rachel in the city of Beis Lachem. Yeah, www.caveofrachel.com. Write that down, caveofrachel.com, and people go there to pray. In Parshas Vayechi, in the last Torah portion in the book of Genesis,
so.
Over in Parshas Vayechi, in the last Torah portion in Genesis, in Genesis 48, so Yaakovinu sort of apologizes to Yosef. Yosef was Rachel's eldest son, and he apologizes to Yosef, and he says, "Look, I'm sorry that I wasn't able to bury your mother in the same place that I buried, Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. Avram Yitzchak are buried, and Yaakov was going to be buried, and Sarah and Rivka and Leah were buried. Yaakov, apologizes that he couldn't bury Rachel there because we happened to have been traveling on the road when she died, and it wouldn't be nice to just like wait till we get to Hebron and bury her in Hebron. So we buried her right there on the spot in Beis Lachem." And Rashi says, very fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, this is in Genesis 48, verse 7. Rashi says, Avodalacha, you should know, she'al piya dibur kavarti Hashem. I buried her there because of a prophecy, because of Hashem. She'tehela Ezra lebonah, so she should help her descendants. K'shiyigal oisam nevuzradran v'hayu oivim derech sham. When Nebuzadran, who was the general of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king's army, who destroyed the first temple and exiled the Jews to Babylonia, so when the Jews were passing by Beis Lachem on their way to the Babylonian exile, they would pass by Beis Lachem. So Yatzasa Rachel al Kivra, Rachel would sort of, I guess the spirit or the ghost of Rachel would sort of come from her grave, Ubaicha umavakeshes aleihem rachamim, and Rachel would come out and cry and seek mercy upon the Jewish people. Shenemar kol brama nishma. A voice is being heard from Roma. This is a verse in Jeremiah 31:14. V'kadosh baruch hu meyishiva yesh zechar lepulaseich v'shavu banim legvulam. And God will answer back that there will be reward for your deeds, and v'shavu banim legvulam, the sons, the children, your descendants will eventually come back to within their borders. So that's like a very hopeful passage. So the hope, there's a sort of a hopeful yearning that's sort of symbolized by Rachel being buried specifically in this site of Beis Lachem. Now, the next place where before we get to like all the other things that come up with where Beis Lachem is mentioned in Tanakh, there's another very interesting thing that's connected to Beis Lachem. We said earlier that Beis Lachem is synonymous with the city of Ephrat. Now, Ephrat, besides being the name of a place, is also the name of a person. There's a character in Tanakh who has three names, and one of her names is Ephrat. Ephrat is actually it's a popular Hebrew name nowadays in Israel, even in America.
What's people use
the name Ephrat. What? Okay, so who are we talking about? Someone named. There was in the beginning of the book of Exodus, in Exodus chapter 1, it talks about the story of the Jewish midwives. There were two Jewish midwives, one named Shifra and one named Puah, which the Bible doesn't tell us exactly who they are. But rabbinic tradition tells us that Shifra and Puah are Yocheved and Miriam. Yocheved being the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu, and Miriam being the sister of Moshe Rabbeinu. There's another tradition that says that Shifra and Puah were actually Egyptian women who converted, but the mainstream tradition is that Shifra and Puah are Miriam, or Yocheved and Miriam. So Puah slash Miriam and Shifra, they rejected the Pharaoh's command to kill all the firstborn Jewish babies, and they actually helped keep the babies alive. And it says that in reward for their God-fearing actions, Vayas lehem batim, Hashem gave to them houses. That was the reward that Shifra and Puah, or Yocheved and Miriam, got for saving the Jewish babies, that God gave them houses.
Real estate.
Where?
So the literal meaning is that he gave them houses. So the Gemara says, what does it mean that God gave them houses? Gemara says it means that he dynasties. Gave them the house dynasties, right? What does that mean? The house of the Kohanim, are descendants of Yocheved, right? Yocheved had a son named Aaron, Aaron the Kohen, all the Kohanim are descendants, right? The house of the Levites, the most prominent of the house of the Levites, you know, are descendants from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was a son of Yocheved.
What's the house, right?
And the house that was given to Miriam
is... They don't have a place.
No, not a house, a literal house. I mean, a genealogical status. Right? And then there was the house that's given to Miriam. So the house that was given to Miriam is the house of the Malchus, the house of the kingship. Because Miriam ended up... so this is what we're going to say. Miriam married... She was genealogically a Levi, but she married somebody. Oh, we're going to talk about that. She married someone named Kalev, or in English they call him Caleb, right? And Kalev is from the tribe of Judah. If you can read that, can you read it? Tribe of Judah. Like it's not my fault. They gave me a really not such a good marker.
Wait, there's one in the other room.
No, there isn't. I checked. And
I usually carry one around my backpack.
You have one with you or no?
That's our genealogical dynasty.
So King David is going to be a descendant of this union of Miriam and Kalev.
Wait, so Ruth comes from Miriam too?
No, we're going to get to it. I said we're going to get to it. Don't worry, we'll get to it. So King David is going to be a descendant of Miriam and Kalev. Right? Kalev is from the tribe of Yehuda, and Miriam married Kalev, and King David is going to be a descendant of that union. Now, as we said before, Miriam has another name. Her another name for Miriam is Ephrat. Right?
What was her other name?
Her name is Miriam, Pua, and Ephrat. Why is she called Pua? Because when the new baby, the Jewish babies were born, right? So she would say like poo, poo. She would try to like coo at them in order to like console them when they were crying.
It's not nice to call them kids poo, poo.
What?
It's not nice to call them kids
poo. I don't know. It's a different cultural norm.
Is that the first biblical case of onomatopoeia?
Very good. So King David is actually King David is actually King. Touche. King David is actually described as an Ephrati. He's called an Ephrati. Right? Why is he called an Ephrati? So it would seem because he's descended from Miriam, who's one of her names is Ephrat. Right? So Kalev, if you're not familiar with Kalev, we've spoken about him in previous lessons, but Kalev is from the tribe of Yehuda. He was actually the prince of the tribe of Yehuda when the Jews came into the Holy Land. So he was like the head of the tribe of Yehuda. He was also one of the spies that Moses sent. He was one of the two good spies. Him and Yeshua were one of the good spies. And in the beginning of the book of Joshua, we spoke about this when we talked about Yericho. So Kalev was another spy that Yeshua had sent.
He was already then married to Miriam?
It would seem so, yeah. So that's David HaMelech and his relationship to Ephrat. That's what we understand. Now... Okay, so you're asking a question. Where does Ruth fit in? So we're gonna explain where does Ruth fit into all of this. Before we do that, we're gonna talk about another place where Beis Lachem is mentioned, and this is sort of gonna lead into what you're talking about. In the book of Judges, towards the end of the Judges, we're in chapter 12. Towards the end of chapter 12, it says. I think this is fourth to last of the judges. It says, "Vayishbet Acharav es Yisrael Ivtzan mi Beis Lachem." After Jephthah, so the judge of the Jewish people, his name was Ivtzan, and he was from Beis Lachem, and he had 30 sons and 30 daughters. Wow. And he was the judge of the Jewish people for 7 years, and then he died, and he was buried in Beis Lachem. 30 sons and 30 daughters. So there's this character, Ivtzan, who's from Beis Lachem, and he was a judge for 7 years, and he died in Beis Lachem, and the book of Judges doesn't really tell us much more about who this Ivtzan character is. It doesn't say. However, in the Gemara Bava Basra, it says that this person, Ivtzan, is another name for another character in the Bible, in the book of Ruth, whose name is Boaz. So Ibzan and Boaz is the same person, and what actually happened was that even though Ibzan had 30 sons and 30 daughters, they all ended up dying, possibly as a punishment for some sort of social snub that Ibzan didn't invite Manoach to some of his happy occasions, to his different simchas. So therefore he got punished, and all of his children died, and then Boaz / Ibzan ended up childless in his old age.
Who's Manoach?
Well, Manoach was the father of Shimshon. It's a whole different story. I don't want to get into it, but that's just who he was.
Where's all this story?
Well, this is a Gemara in Bava Basra on page 91a through 91b. Okay. So now we get to the book of Ruth. I know, you're waiting the whole night to get to the book of Ruth. Right? I have a personal interest, I call it biblical genealogy. No, it's a personal interest called biblical genealogy. Not many people follow this field of study. But to understand the book of Ruth, you have to understand a little bit of the genealogy of what was going on over here. There was a man in the time of when the Jews were coming out of Egypt. His name was Nachshon, the son of Aminadav. Nachshon ben Aminadav was a very important person, also from the tribe of Yehuda. He's most known for being the first person to jump into the Red Sea before the sea split. And so,
Nachshon.
What?
The Red Sea's in that gulf.
No, that's a different gulf.
No, it's the same gulf.
I'm not sure if you're right. I'll have to look it up. But Nachshon ben Aminadav was also the prince of the tribe of Yehuda. He was the prince of the tribe of Yehuda in the second year from the Exodus. Not when they entered the land, like Kalev was, but he was the prince in the earlier times. And he was actually the brother-in-law of Aaron HaKayin. Right? It says that Aaron, Moshe Rabbeinu's brother, had married a woman named Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav. And she was the sister of Nachshon. So Nachshon is like, he's up there. He's up there by the note. No, it says, Elisheva bas Aminadav, achis Nachshon. So it's telling us that she was his sister. So Nachshon ben Aminadav is like, up there amongst the noblemen of the Jewish people. Nachshon ben Aminadav had a bunch of kids. One of his sons was the father of a lady named Naomi. One of his sons was named Elimelech. Shalom, shalom. You remember me? Ata zecherati lifnei yomayim beyishivat Mir.
Don't.
No. Say it. I'll tell you.
לא,
אתה היית שם על המג'גות ואני התקשרתי למישהו, על הטלפונים שם.
עכשיו
What? No, this guy was standing next to me for like 15 minutes. I was on the phone with somebody for like 15 minutes. And he was standing there, collecting money. And we were just like, we were standing right next to each other.
We know each other for decades from the survey of learning papers.
He's American, this guy, no? Where is he?
Obviously not.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought he was speaking English to other people. Anyways, okay, we're getting off the track. Nachshon ben Aminadav had a bunch of sons. One was the father of Naomi. One was named Elimelech. One was named Salmon. And one, his name is not given in the book of Ruth, but his name is sort of known anonymously as Ploni Almoni, which is just an anonymous way of saying, John Doe, right? Unspecified name. And according to rabbinic tradition, it could be that his name was Tov, which literally means good. So these are the children of Nachshon ben Aminadav. Again, the father of a lady named Naomi. A father of Naomi, a guy named Elimelech, a guy named Salmon, and a guy named Ploni Almoni. Or his nom de plume was Ploni Almoni. Now Elimelech was married to Naomi, who happened to be his niece, right? Because Naomi's father was Elimelech's brother. So Elimelech is married to Naomi. And Elimelech was a very important person in his generation. The Gemara says that Elimelech was one of the Gedolei Hador. He was one of the great people of his generation. And as the book of Ruth tells us, in the generation of Elimelech, there was a famine in the Holy Land. And Elimelech, instead of staying in the Holy Land, he went to Moab. He left the Holy Land and he went to Moab. Now Elimelech, in the beginning of the book of Ruth, is described as Vayhi bimei shufayt hashayftim, Vayelech ish mi beis lechem Yehuda. He went from Beis Lechem Yehuda, a man in the time of the judges went from Beis Lechem Yehuda, Lagur b'stei Moav, to settle in the land of, in the field of Moav, Hu v'ishtei u'shtei banav, he and his wife and his two sons. And then it says, who is this man? The name of this man is Elimelech, and the name of his two sons are Machlon and Kilion, and they are Ephrasim. They are described as Ephrasim, from Beis Lechem Yehuda, from the city of Beis Lechem in Yehuda, and they left Beis Lechem and they went to the city of, they went to live in the city of, in the territory of Moab. They left Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us, I mean, it says over there in the book of Ruth that Machlon and Kilion married Moabite women. Machlon married Ruth, and Kilion married Orpah, if I'm not mistaken. And so they married these Moabite women. And what happened eventually? What? Moabites? They live. It's not. You're not going to see it quite on this map.
Was it one from Ammon?
Yeah,
from
the Red Sea. Yeah. Yemen.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Okay, you win. For the record, he wins. The Red Sea is off of the Gulf of Aden.
And that's what they crossed.
Are you from Yemen?
Moabite territory. Yeah, you are. Moabite territory.
Wait, is it one from Ammon, one from Moab? Yeah. Weren't they both different princesses from different countries?
No.
So who are? I thought they were both.
Moabite territory is east of the Jordan River.
In Jordan.
Yeah.
They were sisters. I thought they were both princesses from different countries. One was from Ammon, one was from
Moab. Is the modern day kingdom of Jordan related to the Moabites?
Why would you say that?
Because King Hussein or whatever it is.
No, the modern day kingdom of Jordan, the Hashemite kingdom, yeah. They're ethnically what we would call Palestinian Arabs. Mm-hmm. They're probably they're some sort of tribe of Bedouins, basically.
No connection to any biblical.
No, the Moabites, the Ammonites, all these biblical nations were sort of mixed up by Sancheriv, the king of Assyria, when he conquered the civilized world. He mixed up almost all the biblical nations. We don't know who's Ammonite, Egyptian, Moabite. These people don't exist anymore as a people.
Egyptians?
Everyone got mixed up together. What are you saying?
The people in Egypt aren't the real Egyptians.
Correct. It happens to be, it's a machlekes within the Rambam and the Rosh, whether we say that maybe the Egyptians returned afterwards and that there's a prohibition of marrying a first and second generation Egyptian convert. And so, if a person from Egypt converts, it's a machlekes within the Rambam and the Rosh, if such a person is allowed to marry a regular Jew, and the Shulchan Aruch actually brings both opinions. I don't know what people do with myself. But they marry their own people. They're another convert like that.
What were they called, the people who came out of Mitzrayim?
Erev Rav? Yeah, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Anyways.
It's talking about Mitzrayim. It has to do with Mitzrayim.
Okay.
Being another one on record.
Yeah. Two for me. Yeah.
Two for you and none for me.
That's it.
Was that Twix, right?
Is it?
That's the, yeah. That used to be the slogan for Twix.
Now it's left or right.
That's the new slogan.
It's called stuff. They literally made it taste different, apparently.
Okay. So what happens is the Gemara says that there was
a
criticism.
There's
a criticism against Elimelech and his family for leaving the Holy Land, because Elimelech was a very important person, a very prominent person, very rich person,
and
there was a famine in the Holy Land. He could have sustained through his personal wealth. He could have sustained the entire Jewish people should he have stayed. But instead, he decided to irk his responsibility and skimp out, leave the Holy Land, and just like hang out with the Moabites. And therefore, he was punished. And what was the punishment? He died, and two sons died. And so his widow, Naomi, was left with... He also became poor, yeah. He lost all his money, and he died, and his two sons died. And his widow, Naomi, was left with her two daughters-in-law without any sons. Right, with Ruth and Orpah. And so what happens is that Naomi decides that she's going to go back to the Holy Land, and she's going to try to find her old relatives from Beis Lechem, from the Ephrasim, from Beis Lachem, and she's going to, there's a halacha like this. There's a halacha called the leveret marriage, Yibum. And that halacha says that if a man dies without any children, so his brother has a halachic obligation to marry the widow and sort of take care of her. It's a certain responsibility. But there's a conceptually related concept that a person's relative is supposed to help out his poor relatives. If someone is so poor that they had to sell their field and move elsewhere or whatever, so your cousin, your nephew, or your uncle, whatever, is supposed to help you out, help you buy back your field, help you get back on your feet. And so Nami's plan was that she's going to go to the Holy Land as a pauper and try to get her family to sort of help her out and rely on them. And so she decides she's going to go back to the Holy Land. And so she takes leave of her two daughters-in-law. And basically, her daughter-in-law, Orpah, decides she's not going with Nami. She stays in the land of Moab. And Ruth,
to become
the mother of Goliath.
Goliath,
yeah. And Ruth ends up staying. With Nami, and she goes to the Holy Land with Nami. Even though she's coming as a complete stranger, as a Gyaris.
Arpa stayed very long, and then she switched around in the middle.
Yes, she did. And Arpa left, and the Gemara says that that night that Arpa left, she had relations with 100 men and one dog. And
hell yeah.
And from that... Goliath was born.
I think it was born from the calf.
My brother-in-law.
Goliath came from a dog.
100 men and one dog. And Ruth helps out her poor mother-in-law, who's a widow. She's an older lady. She doesn't have the ability to make a parnasa. And she would go out and she would go to the fields. And she would gather what's called leket, shikha, and peya. There's certain halachic, not really tithes, but sort of halachically mandated charity that a person is supposed to give from their field. For example, if they're...
Truma.
Truma goes to a kayan, Meister goes to a levi. There's certain halachically mandated charities that are supposed to go to poor people. Leket means like if you're harvesting different stocks and you forget one, and it falls on the floor and you don't pick it up, so you leave it there so that the poor people can come pick it up. Shikha is if you have bundles and you forgot to bring one of the bundles into your house, so you have to leave it there for the poor people.
How come there's a whole thing? If you see a bundle on the street, is there, you have to make a, what's it called?
No, that's if it, maybe, that, maybe it's if it's on the street and it already belongs to somebody. This is if it's in the field and you left it in the field. You forgot to bring it inside the house, so then you're supposed to leave it there for the poor people. And so that's what Ruth was doing. Ruth was helping out her mother-in-law by bringing in the produce in that way and sustaining her in that way. And she was doing this great chesed, this great kindness for her mother-in-law.
She was a princess.
Well, yeah, Ruth herself personally, she came from what do they call it? Higher blood, right? She's from a high class family. She was a granddaughter of the king of Moab, and she, sort of exerted herself to try to help her mother-in-law, and she pushed herself into doing that. So Ruth, Nami's cousin, Nami had a brother who's also a brother of Elimelech, Nami's husband. Nami had an uncle named Salmon, and Salmon, who's also named Salma, had a son named Boaz. And Boaz, as we said, the Gemara says, Boaz was this judge, Iv's son, who's mentioned in the book of Judges. And so Boaz took a special liking to Ruth. He saw that she was very kind, and that she was doing the right thing, and she was helping out, doing chesed for Ruth, for Nami. And so Nami decides that what she should do is she should make sure that Ruth ends up getting married to Boaz. And so she sets up this whole idea that Ruth is going to end up meeting Boaz late at night in the granary. Ruth does this, and Boaz says, look, I can't marry you, I can't take the responsibility, because there's a closer relative who's a brother of my father, who the Bible doesn't give his name, the book of Ruth doesn't give his name, his name is just given as Ploni Almoni, but we said that maybe according to tradition his name was Tov. And Tov, and he says, look, if Tov doesn't agree to do it, so then I'll marry you. And they went to the court, and the next day, and indeed, Mr. Tov did not want to marry her, and so Boaz ends up marrying her, and they have a child named Oved, and Boaz dies. Why didn't he want to marry her? Because the Gemara says because this guy Tov did not realize that there's a halacha that you're not allowed to marry a Moabite. An Ammonite and a Moabite are not allowed to marry and they're not allowed to join the regular congregation. But the halacha is that it only applies to the Moabite men, but not Moabite women. Right? But this guy Tov was worried, maybe they're gonna overturn this halacha and then retroactively I'll be violating this halacha. So I don't wanna rely on this tradition.
So how come the other guy?
Boaz knew that no, this is a real tradition, halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai, this is a tradition all the way from Moses at Sinai, it will never be overturned and there's no problem marrying her. And indeed he married her. According to one tradition, you know, not long after he married her, he actually ended up dying. But the point is, the point is that Ruth had a son named with Boaz named Oved. Oved had a son named Yishai or Jesse. Jesse was the father of King David.
Yay!
So now we've reached King David.
Wait, but how do we get to Goya? So the dog and what's the yichus over there? How does it get from the dog to Goya?
Now we've reached King David. You know, King David is also described as having been from Beis Lachem. If you look in the book of Shmuel, Shmuel Aleph Perek Tes Zayin.
Isn't Goya's Orpah's grandson?
Yes, we already spoke about that. We said that like three times already.
When I was napping?
Right around that time.
First he said it, then I said it, then he said it again.
No. He was amazed by it.
He's a son of a...
Anyways, I'm
still waiting for you to say it.
What time is it, by the way?
We don't know who the father is.
All right, I guess we'll have to talk about.
Just tell me, can you tell me real quick before why is it such a holy city for Christian people, Bethlehem?
Why is it such a holy city for Christian people? Because in the book of Micha, it talks about that Mashiach is going to be from Beis Lechem. And it doesn't mean that he's going to be physically from the city of Beis Lechem. Rather, it means he's going to be a descendant from this family that comes from Beis Lechem. And that's the family of King David. What, the book of Micha? They don't know? It's from what they call the Old Testament. Okay, we're going to have to stop over here.
We want more.
It's already 5 o'clock. We have to go.
We have to go.